Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, folks, today was further evidence of what we said with absolute conviction a couple of days ago, which is that Yelena Ostapenko is going to win the 2020 French Open because she either loses first round or wins the thing. And today, well, a couple of days ago, she won her first round. So obviously everyone realised Yelena Ostapenko is going to win the French Open. And today she backed that up by beating the second seed, Karolina Pliskova. And how? She was extraordinary.
Is the story that she was extraordinary, or is the story that Pliskova was poor and disappointing again?
I mean, it's both. Pliskova was poor and disappointing and made to look so one-dimensional. And even that one dimension was not great. Usually one-dimensional players, that one dimension is at least tip-top. And look, Pliskova's can be, but not today. But she, all of her weaknesses were exploited by Ostapenko today. I couldn't believe how good how complete a tennis player Yelena Ostapenko looked. She was a far better player today than I remember her being in 2017 when she won the title.
Why? What was she doing? Because I didn't watch it.
She was constructing points. She had patience and touch and court craft. Her drop shot was a thing of beauty. She wasn't just, you know, the default narrative with Ostapenko when she starts winning matches is that she's just hitting a purple patch and blasting people off the court. And look, she still can do that. And it's a joy when that does happen. But she doesn't just pull the trigger at the first possible opportunity every single time because she doesn't need to. Her serve is still a weakness that could get exploited, but not as much of a weakness as it has been. I just couldn't believe what a complete tennis player I was watching today.
Yeah, I think the best Ostapenko performance I've ever seen is still that French Open final of 3 years ago, but she looked a more well-rounded and more complete tennis player in this match today, and I think that bodes very well for the future for her. As Catherine said, I was so impressed by the movement and the defence because it allowed her not to have to just go for it when she was in defensive position. She could actually play defensive shots, and she had a slice forehand. I don't know where she's developed this from, but she had a slice forehand that caused Pliskova all sorts of trouble. She didn't really know what to do off that ball. And loads of drop shots, good point construction, really focused throughout. She didn't have any sort of lapse or loss of concentration, and even when she maybe didn't convert a break point, she then knuckled down and just made sure she converted the next one. It was a really mature performance, and I think of course Pliskova wasn't as good as we know Pliskova can be, but it was a very familiar performance from her at a Grand Slam, which is why I don't think that's the story. I think the story in the future for Pliskova at a slam will be if she can get it together. If we keep seeing this all the time, it's not really that much of a story anymore.
Yeah, our adversary in the newsletter predictions this fortnight, Grace, she got to go first yesterday with her prediction for today, and she went for Ostapenko to beat Pliskova. And I think all of us in unison said, oh, I would have gone for that. You know, at what point is an upset not an upset? Because I think we all thought that would probably happen today, because obviously Ostapenko is going to win the title. But yeah, it's grimly predictable. And if it feels that way for us, it must feel absolutely horrible. Or I kind of hope it feels horrible, if that doesn't sound too sadistic. I hope it feels horrible for Pliskova and she's soul searching.
Does she get a pass because of the injury at all? The one that forced her out of the Rome final, was it a hamstring or a thigh?
She wasn't wearing strapping again today.
Yeah, I mean, she played it down herself, but we know players can do that. Obviously, Serena was playing down her injury. It doesn't always mean that it's not there just because they're playing it down. She didn't look inhibited, so, and I don't think she said after that that was a factor. So, yeah, I mean, it's just another very, very typical Pliskova performance. A little bit depressing in a way, but I was so uplifted by Ostapenko. And I was thinking back to that 2017 run. I mean, I've always kind of put that down as a little bit of an anomalous Grand Slam result. But actually, thinking about it in context, that was the first Slam after Serena had decided to break from the tour because she was having Olympia. And obviously, Serena hasn't won a slam since she's come back. If you think about it, that 2017 French Open was kind of the ushering in of a bit of a new era. And we've since had a lot of first-time Grand Slam champions, you know, Barty, Kenin, Osaka, Stevens. You know, so many players have won their first slam since then. And I think Ostapenko thinks that she herself kind of inspired a lot of that younger generation to perform at slams, and she's kind of seen them overtake her as her level has regressed quite a lot. And she's talked about, you know, really feeling a bit put out about that and kind of wanting to get back in that kind of mix. And that is very encouraging words, I think, from her as well. It's a signal of a really, really good, positive place that she's in mentally, I think.
And in all seriousness, she plays Paula Badosa next, who got the better of Sloane Stephens today. I went around early on predicting predicting the outside court exit of former finalist Sloane Stephens. If she wins that, she plays Laura Siegemund or Petra Martic. I know Martic is no slouch, but, you know, and if she wins that, she would play either Zhang Shui, C. Burrell. If anyone can fill me in on the C, that would
Clara.
Be great. Clara, thank you. Or Leila Fernandez or Petra Kvitova. You know, okay, she wouldn't go in the favourite against Kvitova. But, you know, those are the players standing between her and the semi-finals. So although, you know, I'm not saying, I am joking about saying Ostapenko is going to win this thing, but she needs to be in the conversation now in seriousness, I think.
100% capable. The fact she's already done it before, and from what you're saying, she's a better player than she was then. And let's not forget, I mean, she's just described in her post-match press conference that she was fearless back then. You know, she just went for everything, and it went in. That's not exactly how... I mean, the sheer fact that she knows that now tells you that there's a lot more that goes on inside the head than it would have done back then. I'm just interested. I mean, I don't know whether we can have the answers to this, but it'd be quite interesting to think about it a little bit more and talk to some people as to where this has come from, this improvement in form. Now, I remember late last year when she was being coached by Marion Bartoli, and we interviewed Bartoli just after the Australian Open, and they were still together at that point. And she obviously did some good work with her, because she got her back in was it the Linz final, I think? In fact, I think she did back-to-back finals. And there was definitely something about Ostapenko that she seemed to me to be taking it seriously again or fully engaged. And obviously, I know she's had the heartbreak of losing her father, which was really, really tough. But she seemed then to be building towards something. Obviously, we've then had the lockdown period. But I think she's now being coached by Thomas Hogstead, who's just moved. I mean, he's coached so many top players, hasn't he? I mean, everybody pretty much at one time or another has been. Yeah. He has coached on the feet in the women's game.
He's the ex that's announced his engagement the day after your breakup.
And you know, and that was a sort of a surprise in the words of Laura Robson that he got together with Joe Contra in the first place, and then it's also a bit of a surprise just how quickly that's ended, and he's ended up in Ostapenko's camp. But you know, talking to Judy Murray today on Five Live Sports Extra, she felt that he's the sort of coach that could really make a difference with a player like her. Just super experienced, not afraid to just put in some basics as to what he expects her to do and a couple of basic tactics and techniques. And I kind of imagine it would be in order, if this happens and you're defending, this is what you do. Because, I mean, he coached Maria Sharapova for a long time. There are certain similarities there. Okay, Sharapova wasn't quite as go for broke, but she became a clay courter. And that's remarkable given what she was.
And I think just sort of short-term reasons so maybe why Ostapenko is doing well is that she's very mentally fresh and not jaded. She didn't go to New York for the Western and Southern Open or the US Open. She said she's been basically playing on clay now for months, and I think it took her a little bit of time to build some form. She lost early in Rome, then went to Strasbourg and did okay there, and now she's arrived at the French Open with, you know, sort of feeling comfortable with the clay under her feet and also not fatigued by this difficult world that these tennis players are living in at the moment. And, you know, we'll get on to a lot of players talking about the sort of stresses of the bubble and that kind of thing. She just hasn't had that weighing on her for as long as some other people in this draw, Pliskova, for example.
So Grace went first with the prediction. She went for Ostapenko. Congratulations, Grace. And then we ceded next spot to David because we took pity on his
not a charity case. On his,
I mean, you really made yourself seem like a charity case. Yes, David had he had the full orchestra out, not just the violin. So we let David go next.
I was doing all sorts of emojis to try and get some sympathy.
Also talked him out of making what would have been a horrendous error of picking Clara Towson to beat Danielle Collins. And paved the way, David, for your moment of triumph.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of lad that Matt is, isn't he?
Mm.
But what is she doing, Clara Towson? I know she's only 17 and it's not all about me, but, I mean, you know, she was
she'd
amazing.
She'd lost before David realised she'd taken to the court.
Correct. Suddenly I'm looking down the draw and what's the name who's playing against her? Who was it? Danielle Collins is in the next round. And I'm thinking, well, what was the score then? Did she retire? And it turns out, no, she just lost 6-2, 6-3. And I'm thinking, hold on, you spent 3 hours beating my finalist, 9-7 in the third,
and looking like a world beater. Exactly why it was entirely predictable, David.
Yeah. It's a tale as old as time, David. 17-year-old, unable to back up a big win because of the emotional and physical toll that
and
it takes.
She qualified.
Yeah.
You said I need to let her off.
Yeah. Anyway, right. This was supposed to be my opportunity to give you a moment to gloat.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, thanks, Matt. So, yeah, and in the end, I went for Fiona Ferro also because Matt keeps telling me how good she is. And frankly,
Had you seen her play before today, David?
I actually saw the Palermo final that she won, but I can't say. You know, sometimes you watch a tennis match and you really watch it. And other times you end up finding that the match has ended and you must have been doing three other different things and you don't really know too much about what went on. And that's how I felt at the end of that Palermo final. I really wasn't concentrating properly on it. So I saw bits of her win over Heather Watson, but it also felt like Watson had played really well in that match. And so I'm kind of thinking about it through that lens. I went for Ferro just because Matt told me that she's really good. And I don't trust myself anymore, to be honest. I've lost all my confidence, folks. I've got the predictions yips. And
he cut a really sad sad figure yesterday.
I was starting to get... I mean, I know this is sounds silly, but I was really just doubting everything I thought.
He was comparing himself to Vince Spadia. It
yeah,
was
a 21-match winning, losing streak. Anyway, I watched the match tonight that she won against Elena Rybakina, and I loved the match. It was fantastic. I mean, Rybakina is 6 foot tall. She hits the ball so hard on the serve, the forehand and the backhand. But Ferro is just one of my favourite types of player. Just an athlete, a thinker, creative, good. It looks like good technically constructed ground strokes, ones that aren't just about slapping the ball and hitting it incredibly hard, but there's the shape and there's design behind everything. And she would... You can see her thinking a couple of shots ahead almost and setting things up. And she was having to do that in the face of this power coming at her. And she and also it was a really good atmosphere inside the Chatrier court. All the fans that were in the complex were in there pretty much cheering her on. And so it did lead to some properly comical winners from Rybakina to stone cold silence. As a contrast, which just I felt that they were almost passive aggressive silences. But Ferro went a breakdown right at the start. She went a breakdown at the start of the third set, and she found a way to win.
You're glossing over those moments of utter despair, David. Now that it's all ended up okay, they are mere blips on your radar. But at the time,
when she went two love down. In about 4 minutes, it's just becomes here we go again. And I'm sure she was thinking that too.
It's all about you, isn't it, David? So is she going to be your girl now? Are you going to keep playing black?
Who's she got next again?
She's got Patricia Maria Thig.
Well, I'm backing her to beat her. Yeah,
she's also in form. She won Istanbul, right? Mm. So that is two very, very in form clay quarters meeting in the third round.
I really rated Ferro.
She still, David, doesn't have a clothing sponsor, Fiona Ferro. So
yeah, she can wear.
I don't know what
podcast.
I'm thinking here. She could have the sort of your name brandished across her chest.
Oh my God, this is getting weird.
Yeah, all the tennis podcasts, that would be less weird.
This is getting Stefanos Tsitsipas weird.
Don't you think that lack of clothing sponsor is one of the reasons why she's quite a fun player to watch? She's got a very relaxed vibe on the court. She's kind of bouncy and just up for things. And she doesn't really look like she's playing in this ultra-competitive Grand Slam tournament. She kind of looks like she's just gone down the gym kind of with her tennis racket and found someone to play with. And she's also a really, really good competitor. It doesn't take away any of that side of her game, but she's just very easy to kind of relate to. And she's got a very quick, loose arm as well. She gets a lot of power on that forehand.
Barty, in a way, that you get the sense that if you handed her a baseball bat or a cricket bat or anything, she could just play it.
All right, I'm sold. I'm sold on Fiona Ferro. Should we stick with the women's for a little while, seeing as that's where we are? Sofia Kenin won today against Anna Bogdan, the Romanian. David, you were commentating, covering this on the radio alongside Judy Murray. It's kind of a similar story with Kenin winning through, sort of relying on her competitive instincts to get her over the finish line. She does seem, as much as she's still doing her strutting and stomping around the court and all of the hallmarks of Kenin are there, there is also this sort of shadow of self-doubt that seems to be following her around, which is disconcerting to see that in her.
It's a very different feel to what it was in Australia. And I mean, obviously she won the tournament there, but even if I go back on every other time I'd seen Kenin play before she won the Australian Open, it feels different to that as well. And it maybe it's our perception of her. Maybe it's what we know about her having lost 6-love, 6-love to Azarenka in Rome. But First of all, I thought she did really well to fight back from a set down against Anna Bogdan, who hits the ball really hard, the Romanian. But so it was she played reasonably well, Kenin, to get into a winning position. But the closing stages were just an ordeal, and an ordeal to watch, and an ordeal for her. Very, very entertaining at the same time, because whereas we found it funny how she stomped around as though she just didn't give a monkeys about who might be upset about our body language in Australia, in this instance, it was just so amusing to see her 40 love up, three match points, and suddenly she started missing, and she missed four shots to lose her serve or for her opponent to hold right at the end. And so miffed was she that she hadn't taken these chances, that thereafter, when she did all the right things and started hitting winners, she'd hit a winner and immediately throw her arms up as if to say, well, why on earth didn't you do that 2 minutes ago when you had the chance to finish the match? And she was so hard on herself. I just see her playing so on the edge all the time. And what used to be coming across as just she's in every point and every match, and therefore she's a real threat to all the big names. Now that she is the name, it ends up feeling like, my word, she's on the edge of combusting at any point here. And we know that she prepares for matches and she's in tears because she's got herself so worked up about what's coming and how much she wants to win. And that's what comes across. You know how much it means to her, but it also makes me anxious to watch now. And I didn't used to feel like that. I don't know whether it's me, I don't know whether it's her, but that's what ends up happening.
Yeah, if you'd screenshotted her face as soon as she'd won the match point, you would have thought that she would have lost the match. She didn't look particularly happy at all. And then it was slightly awkward when the first words of the on-court interview were, "Great match!" And her face was saying it was as though she felt the exact opposite about the closing stages. I think she was quite pleased with her overall level in the match, but just because those closing stages were so vivid during that on-court interview, it sort of tonally felt a little bit strange.
She plays Irina Bara now of Romania, 25-year-old, 142 in the world. I know nothing about her. There's a lot of Romanians in the draw, aren't there, in the women's draw. They've got real depth these days. I mean, obviously, that feels like a massive opportunity for Kenin. But on the other hand, I kind of think that's a bit of a nightmare for her. It just ramps up the pressure, doesn't it? She's a Grand Slam champion facing the world number 142. She is 100% expected to win that. And I don't think that's the ideal situation for her just at the moment.
And again, I think the fact that she's the classic case of the hunter becoming the hunted, but in her mind more than anybody's, it seems. And that's where I think there's work for her to do to just adjust to this new situation. And actually, I don't know her opponent either at this stage. We'll read up on her, we'll watch her play. But it's one of the lovely things about this event is the number of players who've made a real breakthrough here. Players ranked 150 in the world. You know, we think of the Egyptian player that we saw after a couple of days of the tournament against Pliskova, and there are many of them, the player who beat Coco Gauff. These are great stories and people to find out about, and it's our opportunity to learn about who they are.
Did Muguruza play today?
Yeah, she won.
Did.
She beat Kristina Pliskova.
Ah, yes. Okay. So, yeah, that was straightforward, plain sailing. She's through and she faces Danielle Collins. What's she going to make of Danielle Collins?
Oh, that could be aggro fest.
Do you remember that match she played against Mladenovic on Longlen a couple of years ago, which ended with the finger wag?
From Muguruza, yes.
Yes, I think it was 2017 when Muguruza was playing as defending champion, actually. She was knocked out by Mladenovic, and there had been... I mean, it's not a perfect comparison, but Mladenovic, I think, had indulged in some slightly Danielle Collins-esque antics, and Muguruza
certainly engaged the crowd, didn't she?
Yeah.
And worked them a little bit. And so it doesn't take much for the French crowd to get on the opponent of the one that they are cheering for. And then when they sort of tried to give her a round of applause as she departed the court, she wagged her finger as if to say, no, don't try and get around me now.
It was a really
get lost.
Epic Roland Garros finger wag. There have been, I think, two epic Roland Garros finger wags that I can, that are in my memory anyway.
The Federer one?
Yes, the Federer finger wag and the Muguruza finger wag. They're both
epic. And didn't Muguruza also say something like, oh, I've heard that she speaks 25 languages in the press conference afterwards, just kind of slightly taking a little dig at Kiki Mladenovic.
Saw it Irani-esque. Sabalenka won today over Kazakhina 7-6-6-love, and Ons Jabeur straight sets over now Hibino. So Jabeur will play Sabalenka. Could there possibly be a greater contrast of styles than that? Maybe a sort of Nicolescu Sabalenka. But anyway, I'm very much here for Jabeur Sabalenka. That sounds great. Yeah. In fact, a lot of these sound great. Collins, Muguruza, Petra Kvitova against Leila Fernandez. Leila Fernandez seems to be happening. You picked the wrong youngster, David.
Yes, all the other Canadians are doing very well in this tournament. All the ones we maybe didn't expect.
Yes, so moving on to other Canadian fortunes today. We have lost the number 9 seed, Denis Shapovalov, playing as a top 10 player for the first time in his career.
Technically, no. Yeah, because he lost his top 10 ranking a week after he got it. Because Bautista Agut did something.
Without even doing anything.
Bautista Agut's got it back. I think he's a top 10 seed here. But he's...
Yes, he's the number 9 seed.
Yeah, but he has unfortunately lost that top 10 ranking.
Well, he's lost a lot of things this week because he's lost in the French Open in the second round in 5 hours to Roberto Carbajos Baena. How close to an accurate pronunciation is that, Matt?
Yeah, pretty good. Carbajos Baena.
Oh, crikey. That's not very good at all.
It was all right.
Wish you'd told me that before I said his name about 50 times on the radio, Matt.
Carbajos Baena.
Nailed it.
Thank you. Nailed it. Okay. I spent the whole of those 5 hours thinking, oh my God, I'm going to have to properly learn how to say this name. Bloody hell, Dennis. So, Carbajos Baena.
Only just got Shapovalov.
Well, you can forget Shapovalov because he's gone. 5 hours. Let's deal with the match first, because we've had some very interesting comments from him after the match. How... I dipped in and out of this one. I watched the deciding set. I watched his two serve and volleys from 30 all serving to stay in the match and thought, what on earth is he playing at here? What was he playing at for the whole match? What was the story of that match?
Well, like you, I was in and out, but the bits I saw, Shapovalov was really struggling to hit through Carbajos Baena. I mean, he's a kind of player, the Spaniard, who I find a little bit hard to talk about without sounding really patronizing, because he's one of those players who you would kind of describe as a maximizer and making the most of what he has and really consistent. And those things are all true, and he has an incredible attitude and a kind of relentlessness to his game. But in comparison to Shapovalov, he is limited as a tennis player. Shapovalov has a lot more options in his game, and frankly the match was kind of on his racket. But this was not totally unexpected based on Shapovalov's recent form in Grand Slam matches. I hadn't quite processed the fact that he keeps having really long matches at Slams. He hasn't had a straight set to either loss or win since last year's US Open. It's now 9 straight matches, all either 4 sets or 5 sets. So he does have this tendency to get involved in lengthy matches. He was quite frustrated today, I thought. I don't know whether it's a new thing or whether I'm just noticing it for the first time because of the lack of fans, but he's incredibly vocal between points, kind of really shouting at himself. And I don't know whether this is as I said, something that he's doing more recently, or whether he's always done that. But I kind of got the sense it was a more recent thing. He cut a frustrated figure on the court, and we'll hear about his kind of general mental state at this tournament. He is frustrated, and I think he was also a bit annoyed that with the conditions, and he couldn't hit through Carballes Baena, and he didn't like the heavy ball and the slow, damp court, and it just didn't really suit him. And I think in total he hit 106 unforced errors. You know, he was trying to play the match on his terms, but he just didn't have his best tennis on the day. And he was very close to winning. He served for the match twice in the fifth set, didn't manage to serve it out. There was a controversial moment involving a call that he thought was out, and the umpire came down and called it in. And Shapovalov has since put up on Twitter a screenshot of the Hawkeye that was used, I think, on American TV broadcast, showing that Hawkeye thought the ball was out, and saying, when is Hawkeye going to be used on clay? Now, I'm not sure he wants to really be getting involved in that topic. I think there is a genuine reason why Hawkeye is not used on clay, because it is not accurate enough. I know they are developing Fox 10, I believe, to be used as an electronic line calling service on clay, but Hawkeye at the moment just isn't accurate enough. But I think it's just representative, that tweet, of a very frustrated Denis Shapovalov.
And you asked the hard-hitting questions, Matt. Here is Matt and Denis Shapovalov post-match.
I think you came to the net over 100 times today, and I noticed that you serve volleyed on the last couple of points of the match. Just wondering, what was the thinking behind that strategy today?
I mean, it's impossible to hit a winner with these balls, so figured I might as well come to the net, because it's just not going to sit there and play a 10-hour match. That's honestly why I was coming in. There's just no point to stay from the back.
I think you said earlier in the tournament that you didn't want to talk about the French Open bubble compared to the US Open bubble until the end of the tournament. Just wondering on your thoughts on that now, whether you could explain the differences and which one you preferred.
Yeah, honestly, I think they're not doing a good job. You know, there's really no bubble, especially in the second hotel, I heard. You know, scheduling is absolutely awful. I mean, after a 5-hour match, I have to play doubles now. It's just complete trash scheduling. It's disappointing. I mean, you're in a Grand Slam, and I don't want to sound spoiled, you know, but it's just, you expect at least some help from the tournament to help you compete. I mean, how am I supposed to come out and play doubles now after a 5-hour match? You know, they could, it's a first round as well, they could have scheduled it way better, way easier. I mean, it's just not acceptable. And the bubble as well. I mean, it's just, there is no bubble. You know, you can leave the hotel, you can go to the city, there's no problem, there's nobody stopping you. So it's New York was done way better.
Matt Roberts, the king of the gentle grilling.
Perfect. Perfectly phrased and pitched questions, Matt.
Yeah,
great job.
So great. And he didn't even need prodding into that, did he? It was all there. Mm. It was all there waiting to come out. It seemed to me like he was waiting for someone to ask him that question.
I mean, I didn't mention the word scheduling.
Enter Matt Roberts.
And he went off on this rant about it. As you said, he was obviously waiting to get it off his chest.
Yeah, but before we drill down into our reactions to what he's had to say there, there were some not dissimilar comments from Alexander Zverev last night. He finished late last night, came into press after we'd recorded, I think. But this is what he had to say about the bubble. I think he was asked to compare it to New York. He said, yeah, you can't compare the bubble. You just simply can't. New York, I feel the tournament, because that was the first, they wanted to impress us players. They wanted to do something amazing, which I honestly think they have. The hotel was obviously not a 5-star hotel, but how they've done everything in the lobby, everything with the games, with the golf simulator, with the basketball, with the mini golf. All right, Alex. With all the different kinds of entertainment stuff. How they did the outside area with massive screens. How they did the food trucks. Every day a different food truck. How they did just everything. It felt like a massive camping trip. with all the tennis players. The on-site stuff was amazing. Obviously, the suites helped a lot, how they did everything on-site. The entertainment on-site was quite incredible as well. The spacing was incredible. Here, nothing really has changed to a normal tournament except that there is less people. We still have our players' areas. We don't have the entertainment that we did in New York. The hotel is not really a bubble. There are other guests staying there. In the room next to me, there are guests, regular guests staying there with souvenirs every single day that they come, you know, from the Eiffel Tower and stuff like that. I love that he's nosying in on what tourist souvenirs his neighbours are coming back with every day. I mean, it's pretty clear there isn't really a bubble. I don't know if the FFT ever called it a bubble.
I don't think they have, to be fair.
Yeah. Une boule, yeah. Because it's not a bubble. It doesn't have any of the defining features of a bubble. What was your initial, when Shapovalov said what he said, Matt, what was your sort of initial reaction to it?
Well, slightly, you know, he's just come off the court and he's lost. These are going to be quite emotional reactions, probably. So this is probably the sort of extreme of how he feels about it. But I thought it was interesting because, you know, most of Zverev's comments were about the stuff that was laid on for the players and how that isn't the same at the French Open. And
yeah, no food trucks. Yeah,
no food trucks, no mini golf, no basketball.
If you want to win that ATP 500 event of the year again, David, food trucks.
Yeah.
Food trucks at Queens.
Noted.
So I thought it was interesting that Shapovalov talked more about kind of the safety element of it and his concerns about people coming and going. And so there's clearly kind of two pronged issues that players feel about the bubble, the sort of not having enough to do maybe in the bubble. And that's probably a bigger concern for the players on a day-to-day basis, but sort of realistically less of a concern in reality. I think the comments about people being able to come and go, and those are quite concerning, I think. And especially if, you know, if it's all on the players to take the personal responsibility, you know, it's possible that if a case comes in later in the tournament, there could be serious issues in terms of jeopardizing whether these matches can even happen. So They made me slightly uneasy about the next few days ahead, knowing that it's possible that players are not being very strict with themselves in terms of maintaining social distancing and kind of trying to maintain some kind of bubble, even if there isn't an official one.
I think some of what he said does sound spoiled, but I also think he absolutely has a point. I think it's one of those things of, it's a bit like when you lose because of an injury, it's just sort of unwritten that it looks bad to come in and say you've lost because of an injury, and it must, you know, hurt to kind of have to suck it up. From a journalistic point of view, I'm very grateful that he's said what he said, because I want to hear about how the bubble is. But from, you know, if I were his PR person, I perhaps wouldn't be delighted that he said that, because I think bits of it do sound a tad spoiled. I think the scheduling stuff about, you know, having to play doubles after a five setter. I mean, it is not unusual to be scheduled to play your doubles match after your singles. I mean, that's what you're signing up for potentially when you enter the doubles. And
that's why no top 10 players play the doubles.
Well, exactly. And so, I mean, you know, sadly, no one told you to play 5 hours tennis. I think that sounds just kind of whiny.
It's just emotional
totally forgivably whiny, but that kind of detracts from some of the quite important points that he was making there. And all of them really echo what we've been trying to put our fingers on about why this feels so different to the US Open. And while the US Open was embracing being a Grand Slam in a pandemic, the French Open is seemingly ignoring being a Grand Slam in a pandemic.
Well, I think it is trying to be itself, but with whatever restrictions they've placed on them. And doesn't that kind of just fit ultimately with their own respective identities? They actually go, if you think about it. Because, and actually, if you look at all these events, the same thing. Wimbledon has a conservative and thought through process of having had pandemic insurance, so it didn't need financially to run itself. It couldn't anyway. I know that it couldn't, but it ends up giving lots of money to all the players so that they're all looked after. That's very Wimbledon. The US Open still wants to have the show, and it wants to be able to make the players go, wow, and it has the space to do it as well. That's the other thing. The French Open just doesn't really... It's not too bothered about that. I mean, I think its view is we're putting the tournament on. This is our wonderful tournament. You turn up and play or don't. Those are your choices.
But there's an incoherence, isn't there? Why have they, on the hotels front, they've been stricter than the US Open? They have said everybody, no matter how big a superstar you are, even if you're prepared to pay for your own security, etc., you have to stay in these two designated hotels. What is the point of that if those hotels are just open to anybody and not any kind of bubble? What is that achieving? It doesn't seem coherent to me at all. And as much as it will sound spoiled for multimillionaire tennis players to be complaining about that, I think they absolutely have a point.
I mean, I agree with you. And to me, the common sense thing to do is to create a bubble and to do it, I guess, more like the US Open did it.
I think where I would probably come down on this is that if the French Open gets to the end of the tournament and they've not had a big COVID problem, and fingers crossed that is the case, based on those comments from Shapovalov and Zverev about the measures that are in place and the fact that they're not as strict as the US Open, I would kind of feel like maybe they've got a little bit lucky with it all. Whereas at the US Open, I felt fairly confident that they were doing absolutely everything they could in terms of maintaining safety and keeping the event as secure as possible.
Yeah, it is going to be interesting, isn't it? We've also had the stories breaking that Fernando Verdasco intends to sue the FFT. I mean, it's just words at the moment, but he has signaled his intention to do that over his removal from the tournament, and I think that's something that Damir Dzumhur was talking about as well. But obviously that's kind of a watch this space situation. I've read the sort of the skeleton of his argument of why he thinks he's got a legal case. But if the moment arises, we will drill down into that in some detail.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, tennis podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
We had Novak Djokovic, the top seed, playing today against Ricardis Berankis. What were Berankis's odds prior to the match, Matt?
They were 33-1.
So had David elected to go for gamble big on Berankis today, he could have earned himself 330 points. But he decided not to go big on Berankis.
I might have had about a 10-minute period of feeling how great it would
imagine
be.
Imagine what that graph
happened.
Would have looked like, David. It might have pointed up and everything.
Yeah, but I commentated on that match and it was just not remotely competitive. Djokovic, again, for the second match, just looked fabulous. He looks so focused right now. There was one little moment where he smashed the sole of his shoes with his racket in frustration at missing and knocking the clay out. But, partly because just the opposition he's had so far, Berankis very similar to the first-round opponent, Mikhail Immer. Good players, just they don't have the tools to hurt him. But he just looks really focused and ready and determined to, I think, probably it's a manifestation of the old resilience of things having gone against him in his mind, which they did in the US Open, his own fault. But I think he wants to put the record straight by coming and winning this thing now. I think if he'd have won the US Open, I think I'm not so sure he would look quite as granite-willed as he does right now. He looks as though he wants to win this as much as I've ever seen him want to win something. He looks absolutely determined to go and take this.
Mm, that's really interesting. Looking at the top half of the draw, I think the only other player left in it that I would give even the slightest chance against Djokovic is Tsitsipas, who was very good today. Discuss.
I'll just quickly jump in with one more name before David talks about Tsitsipas, because I know David watched that match with a big smile on his face. and I think you would have to say Bautista Agut would have a bit of a chance against Djokovic, given the head-to-head and the way he can match Djokovic for consistency from the baseline. I think he can frustrate Djokovic. I certainly wouldn't be predicting him to win that match, but I would say he has more of a chance than anyone else in the top half of the draw, bar probably Tsitsipas. Yeah, I think those two names.
Do you think he has less of a chance on clay than he would on a hard court, even though Djokovic is better on a hard court?
Yes, I think so. I think all of his wins maybe against Djokovic have come on a hard court. Yes, so I would say so. I think Bautista Agut is a better player on a hard court as well, and a hard court helps him get the most out of his game in that matchup. Whereas I think maybe clay would be a decent surface for Tsitsipas to play Djokovic on. I was watching Tsitsipas today, and it was such a different experience watching him today compared to that first round. He seems to have settled and adjusted to the conditions, and it was a reminder of how well his game does actually suit the clay. He's got time on the ball, and it doesn't really impact his slice backhand, which I think is, whenever I watch him on a hard court or a grass court, I think that shot can really get exposed. But on clay, he doesn't really have to hit that so much, and he's physical and strong, and there's just a lot to like about his game on clay. And he was really great and in control today against an opponent who is a very good clay courter in Pablo Cuevas, and pushed him much closer in Hamburg last week. So I think Tsitsipas has maybe kicked on another level to what he was showing in Germany even last week.
Yeah, and he needed today to be straightforward, I think, after what he did a couple of days ago, a couple of nights ago, really, because that was a really late finish for him, wasn't it? In his first round against Munar. He plays Bednay next. I'd expect him to come through that. And then it's, do you know who could be lurking in the fourth round, David, that we've not even talked about?
No, who's that?
Grigor Dimitrov. Oh, he's still in the tournament.
For who? Who would Grigor Dimitrov play?
Well, Dimitrov now plays Karabayes Baena.
I only asked because I wanted to hear you say that again.
How was it?
Great.
Sounded good, that.
And the winner of that would face the winner of Tsitsipas Bednay.
Oh, that would be really good to watch. So we would have had Dimitrov Shapovalov as a rematch from the Rome match.
Yes, but he won straight sets, didn't he,
Dimitrov, in his second round match? Look.
After failing to remove his trousers, it all got better from there.
What was that?
He had that classic incident of not properly undoing the zip on his tracksuit trousers and thinking he could get them off over his shoes. And he was doing them once he came onto court. He was sat down in his chair trying to take off his tracksuit trousers, and the umpire called for the coin toss. So suddenly, not only was he struggling to do it, he had a time pressure to try and do it. And that just made things even worse. He got in a right tangle with it. And then he walked to the coin toss with one leg in his tracksuit trousers and the other leg sort of stuck in them, and sort of continued the process of trying to remove them while the coin toss was going on. And the only thing that saved him was that he slightly styled it out on the end by not falling over while he was standing on one leg trying to get them off. That was the only thing.
He really panicked,
that wasn't relatable.
Though, didn't he?
Oh, totally.
He really panicked by getting up for the coin toss. We all know that moment. It's like when you get lost trying to find your way out of a turtleneck. And there's a split second where you think, well, I'm just going to be stuck in this forever. My life now is having my head in the sleeve of a turtleneck. I could see that moment for Dimitrov. He was like, well, I'm going to have to play the match with one trouser leg on. But luckily he found his way out of that pickle. And he won very straightforwardly and is still in the tournament. And we're not talking about him, but we have just talked about him.
Yeah.
But I would like to see Tsitsipas Dimitrov, please. That would be great. With all due respect to Karabayas Baena. That's the last time I'm doing that today. Rublev won today. He plays Anderson. Does anyone think Rublev could trouble Djokovic? No?
Well, I'm really impressed with him. I think he did incredibly well to get through that match against Querrey the other day. What a fighter he is, Rublev. He's got a great heart. You know, he's not a player that I feel like I've taken a huge amount of notice of over the years, because he came along and then he disappeared with ill health and probably his body was a bit too young for what he was trying to ask of it. And now he's just built his game up. And I always think back to that match you and I, Catherine, watched in the pub together in New York last year when he beat Kyrgios in straight sets. That match will always occur to me with regard to him.
Oh, I miss pubs.
Yeah.
And New York.
Yeah, they're quite good, aren't they?
Yeah, I miss everything about that sentence.
Kyrgios?
I like the... I would say that I like the way he goes after the ball. He sort of... I don't think he beats himself before a match unless it's Daniil Medvedev on a hard court, in which case I don't think he's got a chance. So, I'm trying to work out whether Djokovic on a clay court would also cause him a similar problem. But I think it would still probably sit up a little bit more for him to have a go at the ball. And he's got the necessary violence in his game to hurt most players. So I'd actually really like to see that match. If he were to play well, him against Djokovic would be a good match.
Your dreams could come true, David, because I don't think there's anybody standing, with all due respect to Christian Garin, Karen Khachanov, Galan is Djokovic's next opponent. Yes, I'm looking up the first name. He seems to have two initials, Daniel Elahi Galan.
Yeah, he's the chap who beat Cameron Norrie.
Ah,
and then
yes,
he won straight sets today, I think, against Tennis Angren.
Yes. So that is Djokovic's next prey. And then it would be Garin or Khachanov, and then we'll see after that. Tomorrow's order of play is a good one. This is the most exciting-looking order of play we've had, I think, so far this tournament. Casper Ruud and Dominic Thiem first up on Chatrier, then Halep against Anisimova, a replay of last year's quarterfinal. Caroline Garcia against Elise Mertens, and then... what's the first name here? Travaglia.
Stefano, I think.
Stefano. I was going to say Stefano, and then I thought, oh my God, am I just assuming that all Italians are called Stefano? No, Stefano Travaglia against Rafael Nadal. Longlen is Svitolina against Alexandrova. She belts the ball, does Alexandrova. Vavrinka against Gaston H. Hugo.
He's the only French man left in the draw. And I think he's ranked somewhere in the 200s. It's not been a good tournament for them. And this was also the first, just getting all my French facts out the way, this was also the first time they haven't had a seeded woman at Roland Garros, I think since the late 80s. So it was, you know, it's kind of gives you a sense of where French tennis is at the moment.
I still think of Garcia as a seed because it's ludicrous that she's not, utterly ludicrous. Vavrinka against Gaston then, and then it's Zverev against Cecchinato. That could be interesting, very interesting. And then Siniakova against Kiki Bertens, Simon Mathieu. We've got Bouchard against Świątek, Lorenzo Sonego and Taylor Fritz, Norbert Gombos against Diego Schwartzman, and Martina Trevisan against Maria Sakkari. Elsewhere, anything of interest? Yannick Sinner, he faces Federico Coria on court 14. Just keep a little eye on Yannick Sinner, I think. He's doing things. He might be happening. And he's a bit Rublev-like, isn't he? Very live arm, wiry. You're sort of looking at him thinking, where does that power come from?
Yeah. No, it's a very similar type of physique and power. I'm just looking at, I think I've slightly misunderstood. I thought Rublev was a quarterfinal opponent for Djokovic, and he's actually a quarterfinal opponent, it would appear, for Tsitsipas.
Yes.
So even if Tsitsipas didn't make it, I'm wondering about Rublev and Tsitsipas because they played that final in Hamburg, didn't they? So there's all sorts of
mental baggage galore.
Yeah, there's
we love
plenty
that.
Of drama to come and, this and, week, isn't there? And it's Berrettini or Roberta Bautista are the likely options for Djokovic in the quarters.
So I think that's it for today, David. You're not going to get the courtesy of going first in the predictions tomorrow. Not now. You're on a big roll.
I'm back. The comeback is on.
Go and take a long, hard look at the order of play. Unfortunately, now there's more pressure. It's a different kind of pressure, but you've got something to lose now. So, you know, we'll see.
It's all about mindset.
Mm.
And now I sort of
Kenin.
I feel like I'm on a roll.
Yeah, Ken.
A one prediction roll.
One day roll. We wish you well for tomorrow, David, but we're showing no mercy now that you've got your one victory. We hope you're enjoying the podcasts. I'm sure if David were presenting, he'd say, tell your friends. So, you know, tell your friends.
Exactly.
And leave us an iTunes review. That's something I never say to do, is it? Leave us an iTunes review. Tell your friends and, you know, tweet about us, TikTok about us, anything you like. Really.
That's something just, I've never said. I don't even know how you do that.
Just keep enjoying the tennis podcast. We hope you are, and we'll be back for another one of these tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.